Are you f***ing around again, Robert? What's the deal?
Who cares? He's off.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Friday 15. Hello, Let'sRun.com Supporters Club members. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate your support. A bunch of topics to hit for you on this Friday. Jakob Ingebrigtsen has asked for suggestions for his 2025 racing schedule, and I know at least one man on this podcast who's willing to offer them. We'll hear Rojo's thoughts on that. The Jakob Ingebrigtsen and Josh Kerr trash talk has also begun in 2025. We've got some new quotes from each of them. We'll talk a little bit about runners moving on to new training groups or sponsors, including a 1500 meter world champion. The Boston Marathon pro fields are out. Does this mean Eliud Kipchoge's quest to win every world marathon major is over? And we've also got the USA Cross Country Championships this weekend. I don't know how long our preview is going to be, considering there are only 17 women signed up for the open race as of this recording, and the race is tomorrow. But we might address that very quickly. This is Jonathan Galt. I'm joined by Robert and Weldon Johnson, co-founders of Let'sRun.com. Guys, welcome to the show. That's what we call a cue, and usually you're supposed to respond to it, but I guess neither Robert nor Weldon are in a talkative mood right now, so I'm going to continue with something we didn't include in the regular podcast, and it's my fault. I should have brought this up. It was one of our predictions from 2024, and it came from the night before the Olympic 1500-meter final. We were hosting a live show in Paris. This was the night, if you guys recall, that Robert and Weldon disappeared briefly on the way from the track back to our Airbnb. I don't know what they got up to, but they came back. They were riled up and rowdy as I've ever seen them. They were in rare form. And towards the end of the podcast, we started talking about predictions for the Olympic 1500 meter final. And a Let's Run listener named Bill Walsh came up with one of the greatest predictions we've ever seen on Let'sRun.com. And I guess I'll just play it. This is how we reacted to it in the moment.
Yeah, Bill Walsh here. Imagine Kurt running down Jacob and Cole coming over the top.
I think Cole could win. I absolutely do. I think he's the best bet outside of the big two.
Now, in case you missed that, that's Bill Walsh saying, imagine Kerr running Jakob down and Cole coming over the top at the line, which is exactly what happened. And then the next voice you hear is me, Jonathan, saying, I think Cole could win. And then right after that is Robert saying, no, he can't. So, Robert, you were never a believer of Cole Hawker, even the day before the Olympic final.
We're glad to be back in the Supporters Club podcast after missing last week's episode, guys. Thanks for the love and warmth. Wow, took you guys had to go back in time 6 months to find a rare mistake by yours truly. I apologize.
Pretty big mistake, wouldn't you agree?
Not if goddamn Jakob Ingebrigtsen had listened to the Robert Johnson coaching mantra of never leave the inside of the rail. Well, Conker was, he had plenty of run. He should have won that race. Deserved a winner, amazing race. But if Jakob doesn't leave lane one, I'm not sure he does win it. But I'm sorry for not following your cue in the intro of the show, because I had an epiphany. I think maybe we should just devote the entire Tuesday show, because we need the masses, not just the elites, not just the Supporters Club members to hear all this. I had an epiphany today, John. If you could just combine me and you, it would be the perfect human being. It would be amazing. Like, I mean, I was actually stunned that you actually had when you played that clip, that you actually had an opinion. You're full of great ideas, but you're often afraid to share your opinion. I'm never afraid to share my opinion. But the reason why I think the combining of me and you is I was booking an NCAA indoor accommodations for us, John, in Virginia Beach, today in Airbnb, and I was just asking me to fill out our profile, my profile. And just the reviews on Airbnb were absolutely amazing. But they were really praising both me and you. Quote, Robert was a fascinating and interesting guest. He was also an exhausted guest, conducting so many interviews and being involved in the track world. He's very personal, very good guest. One of the best guests I've ever hosted. Very
polite.
Wait
a second. Someone included in that comment that you conducted a lot of track and field interviews? That's made up.
That's what it says. Communication was perfect. But then this is the part where I know they're praising you. They left the apartment in immaculate conditions. Best recommendations. Robert was very kind and precise during our exchanges before the arrival. And they left the place spotless and watered our plants. Now, that was me watering the plants. I'm going to take credit for watering the plants. But John is a very good cleaner.
I watered plants a couple times. I do feel like the optimal setup is usually when my flight leaves after yours. Because inevitably, you will leave some sort of detritus on the floor. And it'll be for me to clear it up. Or sometimes pack it in my luggage and carry it back to the U.S. for you.
And then we're going to talk about this on the podcast. Like, you found this trash talk. Well, it's not you found it. Other people found it too, between Jakob and Josh. But you started a message board that's right under it, like with the lamest, most journalistic, diplomatic title ever. Like, Jakob and Josh talking again in 2025. Whereas I would have like tried to like highlight one quote. But it's good. You're such a good journalist. I mean, it's really not fair to single out one for blame. But where do we begin today?
Well, I wanted to hit, can we talk really quickly about USA Cross? I don't want to spend too much on it. I know there are other sexier topics, but this is a national championship. And it's kind of amazing that just basically no one seems to care about it, including USATF. I went on that website. They have a preview of the Masters races, but they don't actually have a preview of the Open races, which does kind of make sense because the Masters athletes, I'm guessing this is probably some of the top Masters athletes in the country. They're more serious about it. The top pros are largely skipping it, and I don't blame them because there's no World Cross this year. It's the second weekend in January, and it's in Lubbock, Texas for some reason, which on the USA, I didn't even know Lubbock like had a top cross country course. And if you go to the event page on USATF, it says, just a short drive from the Dallas-Fort Worth area or a direct flight on American Eagle. It's not a short drive. Lubbock is 300 miles from Dallas-Fort Worth. So I don't know. I just found that ridiculous. But it's just, look, I don't really expect an off-year USA Cross to be the biggest deal. But you at least get one or two names showing up in years past. And this year, I just feel like no one's interested at all.
Track doesn't need more meets, John. Repeat after me. It needs more meets than matter. As someone, Will and I grew up in the DFW area, so for them to say that Lubbock, Texas is close to Dallas is laughable. Will spent a number of years in Fort Worth. We used to say, like, well, I don't want to shit on Lubbock, but I love Texas Tech University. But there's basically nothing between Fort Worth, Texas and Lubbock, Texas. It's like 5 hours of desert, basically, right?
Yeah. If you look at, I mean, the elite field, sorry, the open field,
wait,
I suppose.
I thought you said you were going to do this. I thought it would be fun to have you. We could all do it as the three of us. Just go through names. There's only 17 names. How many people are in the men's field?
There are 36, 35 in the men's field. So let's go through the women's field because it won't take as long. And just actually see, like, do we know, have we ever heard of these people? Okay, so Katie Camarena, I actually have heard of her. I think she's with Tin Man. Carrie Elwood, Glenda Escobar, Dana Fayen, Candice Fredericks, Ryan Helmers, Jeanette Ingham, Sky Izzo, Kristen Johansson, Kaylee Logue. I've heard of her. She ran at Iowa State. She was a good cross-country runner. Sam Nadell, I think she was at Oregon and Georgetown. Rosalyn Olivo, Janiyah Roscoe, Cassandra Parker, Jennifer Sandoval, Sophie Shunk, and Savannah Shaw. I know she ran at NC State. So I recognized four names on an entry list. Did you guys, any of those names ring a bell?
Izzo, John, Izzo. Good to be here, by the way. Thank you guys for the kind welcome.
Tried to welcome you on. You turtled into your shell and chose not to say anything well then.
He's probably upset, John. You said that the Masters field appeared to be including the top U.S. Masters, but Weldon's not entered in the race. So anyways, congratulations to all the women and men that are battling it out for the national title. You know, we're going to have a segment.
Bernard Keeter's in it, correct?
Bernard Keeter, 2021 Olympian. I don't want this to come across as me like shitting on the people who are showing up. I have no problem with the athletes going down there and running for a national title. Like they're not the ones you sort of blame for any of that. So props to anyone who is making the trip to Lubbock. I just think it's not, you know, it's not a great look. I guess props to Lubbock for hosting as well, because there probably isn't a ton of desire not to, you know, to host in a non-Worlds year. You're not going to get as much interest. Someone had to step up. So whoever's putting on the meet, kudos to them as well.
Can we turn to something that people do want to talk about?
Lead the way, Weldon.
And it is always one area of interest that gets people riled up most on letsrun.com. I feel like that's Jakob Ingebrigtsen. Sorry, Josh Kerr. He's the alpha. There's no question, right? Like, who's the alpha in this event?
I would say Jakob's the alpha.
He defines the conversation. They're chirping at him. Now, he chirps back, but I guess if Josh won Worlds this year, do you think that would make him the alpha? I think people then would give him the due.
I think he'd have a good case. He would be gold, silver, gold in the last three championships, beating Ingebrigtsen in all of them. Like, Jakob, you know, he might still have that reputation as king of the circuit, but if Kerr beats him at three straight global champs and has two golds, I think he does become the alpha.
Yeah, I think the problem till now is, right, the same person hasn't beaten Jakob twice. Hasn't won twice. He's been beaten Correct. By Kerr 2 years in a row. But in terms of Jakob and Kerr, they've started it back up again. The trash talk is back, which is great. In my book, at least. And I think it was Sidious Mag podcast. It's now the quote of the day. Let's Run. They asked Josh about Jakob not running the eight or running the Grand Slam track. And Josh said, quote, "I think it's smart that he didn't sign up, to be honest. In any non-paced race, he hasn't won in the last couple of years. And so you're going to throw him in with a bunch of non-paced races. It seems silly to do that. It's going to expose most of his tactical stuff. And if he was in the 800, 1500 group, watching him run the eight would be like a deer on ice."
Let me interrupt briefly here. I first saw that actual quote in a Norwegian article that was translated from Norway, and they translated deer as Bambi on ice. It's just a side note.
Jakob wasted no time in firing back, telling, I think, a Norwegian newspaper, "The day he contributes to world record racing, I'll take him seriously, but only then." And some Let's Run visitors have noted that Josh did break a world record last year. I was saying Jakob is the alpha, but we are the fact checkers here. We believe in accurate trash talk. Josh has broken one world record. Well, I don't know. It's world best, I guess, technically. We're going to be technical.
Well, these guys just don't want to give each other any credit, I don't think, because Josh did break the 2 mile world indoor record last year, which, you know, obviously doesn't quite compare to Jakob running 7:17 to set the outdoor 3K world record, but it is a world record, even though, you know, Grant Fisher kind of served as a de facto pacer for it. But I give Josh credit. He called that he was going to go after that record 2 months out, and then he showed up and did it. So I give him credit for that. And Josh is also saying Jakob doesn't win tactical races. Well, he won the European title last year. Just because Josh Kerr didn't show up to run that meet doesn't mean it didn't happen. So,
John, please. That's a B race. Everyone knows. A B tactical race, I could go out and win a tactical race if I raced a bunch of like first graders. Maybe I probably could beat them right now, but that might be it.
Well, it's a B race because the other best Europeans didn't show up. But I don't know. He was very impressive in that race. You know, he ran 3:31, this chopping it down negative split. I thought it was good. But look, I think I enjoyed the trash talk. And I do think Josh, you know, the excerpt we quoted makes him look like, you know, it's just pure trash talk. But if you do listen to the whole interview, he also says that he thinks there are other, he said, I think there's a lot going on behind the scenes with agents and diamond leagues and schedules and where you live, you know, so he kind of acknowledged that it's not just like Jakob's ducking him necessarily. It's that there are other factors that go into him not deciding to be a racer. And he also said, you know, if I move up to the 3K, 5K group, well, my 5K PB is 13:23. That's not very good. I'd probably get dragged in that one. So he kind of did acknowledge that was a weakness for him. But the main thing I'm going to disagree with here is I don't think it would be a mistake for Jakob to show up as a challenger. I think we've said this before on the podcast a number of times, but it's actually a great idea because he would get to work on racing his chief rivals for gold in a championship 1500. And who cares if he gets beaten in an 800 2 days later? Like, learn what you missed, you know, whatever mistakes you made, however the race goes in the 1500, that's a learning experience, and you can take that forward and apply what you learn to the world championships.
Well, you say who cares, John, but yet Grand Slam Track awards all the prize money based on how you do in this race nobody cares about 2 days later. So that is an issue. And I can't believe Josh is actually trying to pretend that, like, Jakob is ducking Josh. Come on. Jakob shows up at all the Diamond Leagues. Josh does not. Like, if there was any ducking going during the regular season, I mean, Josh is Mr. Championship season. I have no problem with someone who wants to just focus on those. But, like, to pretend that, like, Jakob is, like, afraid to race Josh in the regular season is preposterous.
I have two thoughts when I saw this. The first was, it's absolutely amazing and unbelievable that Jakob responded to this right away through a press statement. It's not like he was asked on a podcast and it came up naturally. They sent him a press statement. Normally, something like that, they just wouldn't respond. No, he responds with a well-thought-out diss. So amazing on that, number one. Number two is, these guys are just trolling us. Like, they know it's good for the publicity, the PR, because the fact that he did that is just amazing. So I think these guys are laughing all the way to the bank behind the scenes. They're probably best friends, as we said in our April Fool's article last year. You know, maybe these guys are just doing this on purpose. Kind of like, I think, you know, these fighters sometimes know they need to promote controversy and act like they hate each other. But I love it. And I don't know, it's kind of like the modern era of just the way the world works. Like, it's not like the quote was taken out of context, but you don't get the full quote. It's just social media, and then things get a little bit more inflamed, whether you're talking sports, politics, bust, MVP, whatever. I'm kind of stunned that he really seems opposed to running the 800. John, you were saying this, you don't think he would be that bad in the 800. You think he has to be able to run 144. He's so avoidant of the 800, though. I can't really say the analogy that just popped into my head, but it's appropriate. Filter myself. It's like a guy with a tiny weenie afraid to go in the locker room or something. I mean, maybe he's slower than we think, John.
What? I don't know. The guy, he ran 146 back in 2020 when he was 19 years old. He hasn't raced at 800 since 2022, but it's because he races basically every other distance. So you're not going to be able to run every single race. I mean, look at Yared Nuguse barely races the 800. I don't believe that anyone who can run 3:26 for 1500 can run. I think they have to be able to run 144 at least on a good day. So I don't think he'd embarrass himself. I'd probably give Josh a slight edge. I think it would be closer than Josh thinks it would be, but I think it would be fun to see. And I also do think I'm kind of with you, Robert. I don't think they like each other, but I do think at this point they're just like, all right, this is kind of part of my personality. Like, I'm just defined as a hater of the other guy. I'll lob a grenade his way every so often, and, you know, we'll just accept it. And it's entertaining for us because there are two other people in the sport who are doing this. You know, if we had other big rivalry trash talk, you know, episodes to discuss, we'd talk about it. But these guys are the only guys who really want to give us that sort of content. So they kind of know it's going to get play. I guess Noah Lyles and anyone, you know, you could say Noah Lyles versus whoever he's currently competing against.
I would have no problem whatsoever with Grand Slam Track letting Jakob come into one of their meets and running the 1500 on Friday and running the 3 or 5,000 on Sunday. He cannot count, just don't count him in the team standings. Everybody would love it. Takes on the big boys and he would gain the experience of the unrabbited 1500, and then he could take on the guys in the 5,000. So, as John mentioned earlier, Jakob has gone to social media and said, what races should I do? He said he's committed to a couple races already.
Yeah, he's running the Livin meet in France on February 13th, which he usually runs, and the European Indoors in the Netherlands, March 6th through 9th. And he said maybe World Indoors, which is in Nanjing, China, March 21st to 23rd. But he's taking suggestions for the rest. So I threw out there, I mean, my best case scenario is all of these milers just head to World Indoors and race each other in the 1500 there. I don't think that's going to happen because it's 2 weeks before the first Grand Slam meet, and Kerr Neguse and Hawker are all signed up for Grand Slam. So I don't think they're going to do it. That's my dream scenario. But what I do know is all of Kerr and Neguse are both in the Wanamaker Mile, and Hawker and Grant Fisher are both in the 3000 at Millrose. So if they can't all run World Indoors, I'd love for Jakob to come over and run the mile at Millrose against Kerr and Neguse, because I do think he'd just run away with the 3K.
He's never run an indoor race in the U.S., but he does run indoors. I don't know if they just doesn't want to travel. They haven't ponied up the money for him. There's a Let's Run Thrun where people reference the Coffee Club podcast where they think somehow Jakob's going to run the 5K, go for the world record at the New Balance Indoor Grand Prix. One race in the U.S. would be nice. I think that would be great. And then obviously the Let's Run Mile later in the year are, what is that, John?
Backwards Mile? Where are we doing that?
Yes, Clockwise Mile. We should just get it out there. Jakob, you need to come run the Let's Run Mile. You can break the world record. It'll be a clockwise? Yeah, clockwise mile. Never been done.
Yeah, he could be the youngest sub-4 miler in history and the first to run a sub-4 clockwise mile. So hard to pass up that piece of track and field history. It is interesting with Millrose, though, Welding, because Jakob, he says it all the time during the outdoor circuit, like, I show up to all these meets. I like it when people show up. Remember how pumped he was when Cole Hawker raced him in Lausanne after the Olympics? And Millrose is a meet where his main rivals have committed to showing up. You've got Hawker and Kerr and Hobbs Kessler. So three of the top five from the Olympic 1500 are all in the mile. Oh, sorry, Kerr, Neguse, and Kessler. Hawker is in the 3K. But they're all running that. And yeah, obviously they're all based in the US, so it's going to be a little easier for them. But flying from Europe to New York, is that, how different is that flying from, you know, New Mexico or Seattle? It's pretty similar. So that is, this is like the one thing you could say is like, well, actually, we know where the good competition is going to be in your event, and it's actually going to be at Millrose. But yeah, I'm not saying if he doesn't run Millrose, he's ducking them.
Stop right there. It can't be, the answer cannot be Millrose over World Indoors. We have a world championship, but we need more people to take it. Just because Hawker, Neguse, and Kerr have, I don't want to say exposed themselves as being greedy, but have committed to Grand Slam Track and therefore will be skipping a major.
We don't know for sure. We don't know for sure, but you know, you would think maybe.
That doesn't mean that I want Jakob to do it. I want Jakob to show up in Nanjing, China. I want John Galt to be there from Let's Run. And I want to start taking a list of names of people who are skipping the majors. And people can say, of course they skipped him. That's fine. But we at Let's Run try to support these events, World Indoors, World Cross Country, and I wish the athletes would too. And I said at the beginning, I was afraid the Grand Slam track would result in us getting sort of watering down some of our better meets. And that's definitely happening. Now we're getting some other meets on top of that. So there's positives and negatives. But I certainly do not want this to turn into LIV golf, which has certainly not been a net positive for golf. It may have been a net positive for a lot of those guys' bottom lines, almost all of their bottom lines, but it hasn't been a net positive for the fans. I am the voice of the fans.
I love how Robert has become a ninth grade homeroom teacher. I'm going to be taking attendance, and if you don't show up to World Indoors, I'll be sending a note to your parents.
He's got a kid in first grade, John. He knows how it works now.
It's not true. He's been promoted to fifth grade already.
All right, so you want to see him run World Indoors. I mean, Weldon, if you had a vote, I guess you said the clockwise mile. If you had like a race that isn't organized by Let's Run, is there a preference you'd like to see?
Well, Jakob, the clockwise mile can be anywhere. Any location of your place will organize it where you want it to be. Well, obviously, San Francisco, John. Why aren't there more meets in San Francisco? It's a beautiful city. We had our first earthquake. I experienced my first earthquake an hour ago.
Really?
I don't know. Barely. 3.0 on the Richter scale, it appears.
Where would you hold it? Kiza Stadium?
Yes. I don't know. Or I'd have to go to Stanford.
So should we make an offer here? If Jakob wants to run a clockwise mile in Norway, we'll fly out there and film it for him?
100%.
Related to this, Weldon, the other thing I found interesting was Athletics Weekly had their riders make predictions for the World Championship podium in every event this year. It's a fun read. I like the Athletics Weekly guys. But they are a little bit British biased here. And I was wondering, like, if we did the same thing for Let's Run, would we come across as U.S. biased? Probably a little bit, but their picks for the 1500, three of the four of them picked Josh Kerr for gold. One of them picked Jakob for gold. Only one of them picked Cole Hawker to get a medal at all, which I found, like, hugely disrespectful to a guy who just ran 3:27 and won the Olympic final. Now, granted, he'd never medaled before, but that's kind of wild to me. Like, if I'm making a prediction for 2025, if Cole Hawker is healthy, I'm picking him to finish on the podium.
It sounds crazy, John, but then you look at the picks and it gets back to what we're talking about in the U.S. I think one of the big three won't make the team this year, but there aren't that many spots. They all put Ingebrigtsen and Kerr in the top three. So after that, there's only one spot, and there was love for Jarred Nagus. Nagus was put down on two of the scorecards. So that left two spots. One guy put Cole Hawker at third. And another guy put Let's Run baby Niels Laros in the top three. So when you block off Kerr and Ingebrigtsen, you know, in two of your three top spots, there's just not much room left.
Yeah, but what makes them a lock over Cole Hawker?
They've had more consistent success at this event, John.
I suppose they have, but in the most recent championship, one of them didn't medal at all.
Okay, they don't have Jake Whiteman on this list.
Okay, because his most recent, he hasn't even run at a Worlds or Olympics since 2022. Like, that's a legitimate health concern.
Okay, let's say somebody just broke through. I don't know, they view Cole Hawker is a one-off hit wonder, John. That's how they're viewing him.
Yeah, and I think that's a bit disrespectful. I mean, it's not, I'm not saying he's a lot to medal because it's really hard and there's a lot of good guys in this event, but I don't know. It's kind of amazing you could watch that Paris final and not be like, well, I just watched that race. My takeaway was I'm not betting against that dude again. Like, he's that kick, if he's there, he's getting a medal. Now, you can say, okay, well, he was injured in 22 and 23, and he didn't get there. But I don't know. I saw what I needed to see.
Well, I guess there's some concern if he's at that fitness level. But yeah, John, if he's at that level, I don't know how you know, but like, if we thought Ingebrigtsen had problems beating Kerr, is this crazy to think? I mean, that Cole Hawker could just like string some of these together, man. Like, my God.
I mean, recent history says no. We've had a different winner. We haven't had a repeat winner in the 1500 at the global level since Asbjørn Kiprop in 2013 and 2015. So it's been a while. So I'm not saying like, oh, Cole, you know, is definitely going to repeat when Josh Kerr couldn't or when Jakob couldn't. But anyway, I just found that interesting because I was looking at some of their other picks. Like, they all picked Keely Hodgkinson in the 800, and you know, she won the Olympics. She ran faster than a thing Mo ever did. But still, I'm like, well, you know, Mo's really good. And three of the four of them picked Matt Hudson-Smith to win the 400, which, and the, you know, Jason Henderson didn't even include Quincy Hall on the medal stand in that event. So I thought that was kind of wild. But no, it was a fun read. It made me think, like, maybe this is something we should do. Just, like, get our medal picks on record at the start of the year, and, you know, we can come back and say, oh, I told you so, or look like total fools 8 months from now. And then one, I guess I said one other item about the 1500. I'm going to add another item about the 1500 because we're talking about athletes changing groups. It's that time of year. You're getting a new sponsor, a new coach. And a world champion in the 1500 will have a new coach for 2025. That's Timothy Chariot. It's a 2019 world champ, silver medalist in 2021. He did not make the final in 2023 or 2024. And he has been training recently with Niels Lauritz's training group in South Africa, coached by Thomas Lewandowski. And I reached out to Tim Chariot's agent, said, hey, is, you know, has he changed coaches? Is he part of this group now? He said, yep. Yeah, he's with them in South Africa. He's training under Thomas. So I find that pretty interesting because that's a very good group. That's got Niels Lauritz. It's also got Stefan Nilsson, who was in, had a breakout Olympics, made the Olympic final last year, another Dutchman. Those two guys are really good. And then you've got Chariot, who is still only 29 years old. I mean, he's been on the circuit for quite some time, but he ran 3:28 last year. He was second in Monaco. He beat Jared Nagusa in that race. He was second in the Diamond League final. But at the Olympics, he did not run well at all. So, you know, he didn't make the final. So it's going to be interesting to see, like, is he going to relocate to Europe or is he just going to be joining with them in training camps? Like, how's it going to work? But he is doing something that we kind of preach on this podcast is if you feel like you've stagnated, and I'd say, you know, he's dealt with some injuries the last few years, but it does seem like he's stagnated a little bit. Introduce a new stimulus, change something up. He had great success with his old coach, Bernard Uma. He was the world champion, two silvers at the global level, but maybe he's thinking, hey, I've still got some run in me, you know, trying to introduce a new variable, see how it, where it can take me. So I don't mind the move, even though I have a lot of respect for, you know, Bernard Uma as a coach.
You think it's a smart move if you're him? It may be too late, but as you said, John, he was still a player at times last year. He just set this bar so high from when, like, I mean, really 2017 to like 2021. You had some COVID in there, and he obviously lost the Olympics in there, but there was a time he was untouchable. Like 2019, right? He just smoked everybody away.
Pretty much 2018 through 2021. Like 2021 was the first time Jakob ever beat him. So in the Olympic final. And then Chariot came back and beat him in the Diamond League final that year. But he was the guy, and he would dominate these races. His 2019 world champs win is still one of the most dominant 1500 finals that has ever been run. And 2017, he got out kicked in the home, you know, the final lap by his training partner, Elijah Maningoy, who subsequently served a whereabouts failure and was never really the same. So, you know, that's one you look at. It's like, wow, is Chariot, should that, yeah, he's the medal. Maningoy keeps the medal, but Chariot had a great run at the top, and he's still like, okay, other guys have emerged and gotten to his level, but the potential could still be there.
And I was saying to you offline, John, if you're Lauritz, do you want him joining the group? Are you worried about a coaching up potential rival?
If I'm him, I wouldn't mind it because, you know, Laros made the final and was better than him in Paris last year. And I think his potential is sky high. Like, it might help to have a veteran who's been around the block, even though, you know, Laros has been in two global finals at this point. So it's not like he's totally inexperienced, but I think it could help him. Probably helps more than it hurts, the way I see it.
I love it. Look, continue what you're doing and expect the same results is the definition of insanity. So I think sometimes guys give up, whatever. And whenever an African is willing to relocate to Europe, train, or halfway across the world, to me it shows they're extremely motivated. Not everybody's willing to do that. Now, John, the coach may be devastating to his group, right? Back when you profiled them as the top group in the world, and that was before the drug bust, right, John?
Well, it wasn't a drug bust, whereabouts failures, but yeah, it was, at the time, it was the best group in the world because they had the gold and silver medalists at the world championships, and they had the world under 20 champion, George Manengoy. And since then, you know, Elijah Manengoy was suspended, never really returned to the same. George Manengoy hasn't really done much. Chariot's still been very good, but he's kind of been their only guy at the very top level. I think Vince Aquito has been in that group as well. He's done all right, but yeah, it's a blow, no doubt.
Okay, wait, one more thing about Jakob. I always go back to Jakob. He needs to run a Diamond League 5K, right? A fast 5K this year? Or can we save that for next year?
As an no, no, it has to be this year because this is the year I said he'd run 12:29.
Okay. Maybe we'll make it a weekend of Jakob. He can do the 12:29 one day, and then the next day we'll have the Let's Run Mile Championships, and he can probably take that because in the first year we don't expect, obviously, Josh Kerr to show up. But if we call it a world championship, maybe he will.
All right, so we mentioned Chariot moving, changing training groups. Was there any other moving or shaking up that you wanted to discuss, Robert? I see someone included this in our rundown.
I didn't put that in the show notes. That was my genetic equals idea.
My take on that is, like, we've discussed how Hoka NAZ trimmed some people. This is the time of year. People retire, change groups. Decide they want to do something else with their life. There's a threat on Team Boss, a lot of changes in Team Boss. Corey McGee's going back to Boston. Danny Jones, who I still can't believe was an NCAA cross-country champion, I forgot about her. She's moving on. That makes sense. She's not having the success I think an NCAA cross-country champion should have. Asha Pratt-Lear, she's retired. Aaliyah Miller, back to Baylor to be a coach. Scott Fobel, I think, is the one guy. He didn't run New York in the spring, in the fall. He's not running Boston in the spring. I think he's having a baby, people are saying. I think that's it for him, but hasn't been officially announced.
I don't know about the baby thing, but I do think he's at kind of a crossroads because he has not raced a marathon since the Olympic trials, and he dropped out of that one. He dropped out of Berlin before that, so he hasn't finished a marathon in coming up on 2 years. And he's kind of at the point where he has to decide, he's 33, so he's still young enough that he could go for another Olympic cycle. But when he's in Boulder for these marathon blocks, he's away from his wife and it's kind of lonely. He's often training on his own. So, you know, sometimes he'll have John Bossard when he's in Boulder, but like Portland, when he's back there, he's training alone. So is that something he wants to spend his life doing for another 4 years and commit to putting everything into it? Or does he want to move on and, you know, spend more time with his wife, maybe build a family and do other things? And that's not a decision to be taken lightly. But I do think at some point, if you're still deciding, it kind of makes the decision for you. You know, if you don't run a full marathon, you don't run a spring marathon, you're going two cycles without any races. You know, at some point you got to choose pretty quickly, right? Because I think at some point for Scott, someone was saying on the message board, like, Well, he could make good money continuing to do running. You know, he'd get a decent contract and, you know, a couple appearance fees a day. Like, you could make a living doing it. And I'm thinking, yes, he absolutely could continue to make a living. It's the question, does he want this to be what makes his living moving forward? He might not want to live the pro runner lifestyle anymore. He gave it a go through two Olympic cycles, ran some great marathons, didn't make the team. Like, does he want to keep doing the same thing, or does he want to move on to a different part of his life? That's a question you got to face.
Right. He could keep make a living for a couple more years. But at some point, there's life after running. He may decide, I need to start tackling that thing, because every year he's not doing something else, he's losing that opportunity to get started in it. So it's not like most of these guys retire super wealthy and don't need to go get real jobs. And Parker Stinson, former Oregon runner, has stepped away. I thought there was a great post here in the message boards. Parker's run 13:31, 2:10 marathoning. Someone said it's not going to get it done in 2025. What would you do if you had his PRs? Poster Richard Ryder replied, I would probably look back someday and know I gave it my best, was competitive at a pretty high level collegially and domestically in the road with respectable PBs. I would be grateful to have a great experience with teammates and coaches, making a meaningful contribution and a proud member of a champion program. I'm sure I learned a lot along the way and can help others if I choose to do someday. What I wouldn't do, be thinking about, are the snarky comments on Let's Run by people who never produce 1% of the results I have, with a negative tone about anything when mentioning my name. I just thought that was like a good perspective. Like, yeah, Parker never made a team. He was a pretty good runner, but that's how, like, unless you're like a Rupp or something, most people aren't really going to notice when you retire, you know? And even Rupp, the results start dropping off, and then you're like, oh, Rupps will say like, oh, I'm not racing anymore. And you'll be like, oh, you probably would have gotten more fanfare for the retirement if you retired 2 years ago.
Right. I mean, like, Parker is at least good enough where we're discussing him on this podcast. There are some people who are, you know, semi-elite or lower tier professional where we might not even mention their retirement. Johnny Gregoric retired. And he made two worlds teams, a world championship finalist, 3:49 miler. You know, he had a good run at it. And I think the thing when I see these guys retiring, and now people who are younger than me are retiring from professional running, which is certainly making me feel old, because Johnny and Parker were both younger than me. Scott is younger than me. He hasn't officially retired. And I think you got to appreciate, like, yeah, you don't get to do it forever. Try to soak it up and enjoy it while you're in there. You know, you get to go to race in some cool places. You get a lot of cool experiences. You get to pursue something that makes you happy. And I think a lot of times when I hear the retirement post, it's like, hey, I was kind of blessed to be able to do that. And I think that's a good approach.
Finally, somebody brought up Johnny Gregoric. I was waiting how long y'all were going to do that. This is a podcast. We our Ivy League elitist, we have to talk about the Ivy League guy. And John Galt claimed to fame as he beat Johnny Gregoric in a race. And I posted on the Johnny Gregoric retirement thread this week. And I said, people are saying he's a great guy. I didn't know him. I knew his dad, who was also a great runner back in the day for Georgetown and coached at Brown University. His dad was a great guy. So I'm like, I'm glad people are saying he's a good guy. And then I'm like, it always amazed me that Johnny was so good as a pro, 3:49 miler. Because he never won the 1500 or mile, even at the Ivy League championships. And we actually overlapped. I was still coaching at Cornell, but he was a steeplechaser his first 2 years when I was coaching. Then he's moved to the 1500 mile. Favorite, John, you know which Dartmouth runner denied him those victories his senior year?
Of course, my boy Steve Mangan. I was at the one 2014 indoor heps were at Hanover. You were there. I was there. That was actually helped get me hired for letsrun.com because you had ghosted me for a while, and then you said, hey, I'm at Indoor Heps, come up and talk to me. And we shot the shit and saw Steve Mangan, 4:01 at Leverone, got him qualified to NCAAs.
So I was always amazed, like, how could this guy couldn't even win an Ivy League title be so good? And then I'm like, well, Weldon didn't even come close. He was only fourth in the Ivy League, and he was pretty good as a pro. I'm not saying Weldon was as good as Johnny Gregoric, people, but you get the point. But there were some snarky posts on his retirement. Someone said, Someone's like, Johnny retired. Someone's like, yeah, about 8 years late on this one, Johnny. That was poster Ryan Zinke. And then one of my favorite posters, by the way, Thoughts Leader was fabulous last week. I was like, wow, this guy's super impressive. Used to live in Baltimore like myself. Am I permanently going to be replaced on the show? I was afraid that, but then when y'all spent half the show talking about my great ideas, I was like, okay, they can't replace me. But I was like, I want to have my favorite poster on the show, Ruxton Towers XC. He had a post. He replied to this post and said, yeah, yes, good point. If he had, and this is kind of similar to the argument you were just making, John, but if Johnny had retired 8 years ago, he could have done 8 extra years of normal work at a desk like the rest of us. Instead, he had to just run a bunch of fun races all around the world and get paid for it by his sponsors. I can see why you think he screwed up on that one. Oh, wait, I just checked. He's still running well recently. A long time ago, he still sucks. In 2023, his best mile was a 351. I can see why you think he should have retired sooner. If I had run a 351 mile in 2023, I would still be jogging victory laps. So, you know, I do think it's a good job, but I also think I see both sides of this. Like, if you're in your mid-30s and you've really got no shot of a team, if you've got other prospects that are probably going to be on the upswing, you know what I'm saying? Your career could go ascendant versus if you're an aging 30s runner, you're going to be descendant. Well, supporters, club members, let me just say this. I was going to say something about Parker Stinson, but Weldon and John will not let me say it. But if you want to hear my take, pick up the phone and give me a call, 844-538-7786. The reality is, because of social media, there's one thing I'm always going to know about him that I would have never known before social media, thanks to his mother-in-law's post, is all I'll say. And Weldon said, you know, Danny Jones isn't doing as well as we would expect of an NCAA champion. Is that really fair? I mean, I guess I, on one hand, agree with that, but on the other hand, this woman ran 4 flat this year. She PR'd in the 1500. Like, her PRs were not that fast in college. I think she kind of realized, like, she's kind of like a slower version of Jenny Simpson. Like, she was more of an endurance woman in college, right? But then she's like, her PB in the 5K, I think, is at 1517. She's so far away from being world class, she's moved down to the 1500. But even 357, 358 isn't going to cut it. 4 flat certainly isn't. She's got to get down to like 352 now, which is crazy.
Yeah, I mean, coming out of college, I thought she would make at least one U.S. team. But to do that, you got to keep improving. Like, because you go back to college, 2018 NCAA indoor mile, Ellie St. Pierre finishes right in front of her. Danny Jones second, Nikki Hiltz third. So the two women, the one right in front and the one right behind, were 2/3 of the U.S. Olympic team in the 1500, but they also got a lot better after college, and Danny Jones got better. She just didn't, like, now you have to run 355 to make the U.S. team. It's a high bar. So I think you can say, yeah, you know, I was thinking she'd make a team, but also, like, the level you got to be at to make that team, it's pretty damn tough. There are NCAA champions coming out of college every year, and there are only 3 spots on the team every year. So it's certainly not easy.
But I think her PB at the time was like 4:10. Now it's 4 flat. This actually shows you, if I'm a shoe exec, I would think, okay, she's coached by Mark Wetmore. She's at altitude. She's not going to improve that much. This was what scares me about Nico Young. Whereas those other two women weren't at altitude, right?
Yeah, Jenny Simpson did terrible after college, right? She was terrible.
Emma Coburn, too.
Well, that may do it, guys. If the Ravens lose on Saturday, I may never come back to this podcast. Everyone in this town is far too confident.
Robert, come on. You're not losing to the Steelers.
Did you watch the game? We've already lost to them once this year, and this is the same team we've lost to the Las Vegas Raiders and the Cleveland Browns this year. Then we lost to the Steelers earlier in the year, and then in the last game, everyone says, oh, we blew them out 34-17. All I know is it was 7-7 in the second quarter, and Russell Wilson looked like he was 25 years old and was running for the end zone until he fumbled at the 2-yard line. They would have been up 7, and the Ravens panic when they're down in the second quarter.
Okay. But I mean, I guess you have some horrible losses this year, but just upsets like this big in the playoffs don't usually happen. Best of luck. I hope they, Robert, I don't know if you've seen this. Every 12 years, the Ravens win the Super Bowl with a 28-year-old quarterback. They did it with Trent Dilfer in 2000. They did it with Joe Flacco in 2012. And now it's 2024 season and Lamar Jackson's 28. So this is the year if history holds.
And it kind of killed my enjoyment of the whole thing, John, because they also scored 28 points. So we know what's going to happen. I guess that can help my betting now.
34 points. All right. Enjoy the playoffs. Enjoy the U.S. Cross Country Championships. We'll be back next week. We didn't talk about Boston Marathon Field, but maybe we'll talk about that and Eliud Kipchoge on the regular podcast. And then next week, huge week, the Houston Half Marathon is at the end. Is it finally time that the American record goes down on the men's side? So plenty to discuss on the regular pod.
We'll discuss Boston, Helena Berry going for the three-peat, and the Patriots playoff run. We'll discuss that next week.